state cases that are still pending, not just for these defendants, but for other defendants that never had federal charges from the same event. And so the battle will go on in North Texas, and hopefully more people can support the supporters through their own resources.
Javier, we're going to have to leave it there. Javier de Janon, attorney with the People's Law Collective National Lawyers Guild. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
There's no one-size-fits-all puberty experience. If you're trans, intersex, or non-binary, know that you're not the only one feeling confused. For some intersex people, puberty may start later than age 14. You might experience some of puberty's changes and not others, and your body may or may not go through puberty on its own. There are medicines you can take to help your body start the process, like hormone replacement therapy. Some people decide on hormones or surgeries to help their bodies match up to their gender identity, or how they feel inside about themselves. Your gender identity is real. You should be the one to decide what changes you want to make to your body. If you're transgender or non-binary, you may find that your puberty experiences don't line up with your gender identity or how you see yourself. That feeling can be uncomfortable, scary, and stressful. If that sounds like you, know that you're not alone. There are medicines you can take to delay puberty for a while. They're called puberty blockers, and they work like a stop sign by halting the hormones testosterone and estrogen that cause puberty changes like facial hair growth and periods. Puberty blockers are safe and can give you more time to figure out what feels right for you, your body, and your gender identity. You don't have to have all of the answers right now. So remember, it's all a work in progress, and it may take time to figure out what feels right to you, but talking to a trusted adult and a nurse or doctor may help. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. Happy St. Patrick's Day. It's Tuesday. It's 6 o'clock. It's time for Off the Wall. That thing gets shorter every week. And here we are, another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel over here, Kyle over there. Holding the microphone in your hand. That's good.
Hola.
How you doing?
Hola. Que yeah. pasa?
We're speaking Spanish today. Okay, that's good. That's fine. No problem at all. Programming note, this is a special two-hour St. Patrick's Day expanded edition of Off the Wall in stereo. So you get four times as much, I guess. You know what we might do? Should I say? What we might do in the second hour? 8 to 9, which we're not usually... No, wait. No, 7 to 8. Yeah, it's 6 o'clock, 6:04, 6:05 now.
I heard about this. There was a rumor.
Yeah, 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, we were thinking of taking phone calls.
Yeah, that was it. That was the rumor.
We haven't done that in years. Well, the last time we tried it, I don't think we got any calls, which is why we weren't eager to do it again.
Yeah, this this caused quite a stir on our in-station alert system. But I think everybody's calmed down. And we might be able to do that.
I hope so. But, you know, every time we think people calm down, they don't calm down.
Well, let's just explain carefully how it works when we're ready, and then we'll see how it goes.
What, pick up the phone, dial, and talk to us? Yeah, I guess we have to explain that. Well, okay.
Well, I just want our listeners also to be ready for it.
No, that's true.
I don't mean to interrupt.
It's,
sorry,
but
go ahead.
No, it's fine. The thing is, it's not the usual phone number. So, you know, if you're calling the usual phone number, all you're doing is annoying somebody sitting in a different studio.
It's also first come, first serve.
And that's going to come back and hurt us at some point because that person will hold on to that annoyance and throw it in our face at some point. That happens a lot. But when we give out the phone number, just, you know, write that number down instead. And if you already know that phone number, which I don't see how you could because you don't know if we're going to come up with a totally different phone number, Basically, don't call it now because it's not going anywhere now, or it's going someplace that you don't want to go, or that, you know, it just doesn't do anybody any good. You know, it's not reaching us. It's not getting you on the air to say whatever you want to say. So anyway, that's something we might do. We're thinking about it. We're considering it.
We just want to like let people be in the conversation, see what's on people's minds. What are you thinking about? How's your day going? But also, you know, what stories, things that come up tonight grab you? What do you think about it? What's your reaction?
I'm glad you asked because, I've got a lot on my mind. You were asking, right? You were asking me.
No, it is. It's open-ended. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, listen to this. That doesn't sound very loud when I do it that way. Well, it's a lot of paper.
Stop smacking things. They get it. Yeah,
it really hurts when I smack my hand with all these news stories that I have here. But it doesn't work online. I can't do that on a computer and easily go from one to the other, whereas I can rifle through these things really quickly and make all the points I want to make. I wrote that down, too, so that I could make that point. It was easy. All right, so, you know, we have, in case people have forgotten, we have a war going on, yet another war. This is probably the stupidest war I can recall. And, you know, keep in mind, I lived through Grenada. All right, and this tops that because it's so much more damaging. Apologies to the people who live in Grenada, but I mean, look at what's going on now. You have the Strait of Hormuz. Okay, points for people being able to know where that is now. So I guess, all right, Trump, you've given us a little bit of education to make up for PBS. All right, thank you. People, well, do people really know where it is? Can they find it on a map? They know the phrase, Strait of Hormuz, and Iran. They've learned about that. And Oman, yeah, that's a country. You can laugh at it. You can say all kinds of things about the funny names. People might be learning something, but I think what they're learning is that we don't have any damn sense, that we just go into places without any plan and without any strategy to either affect some sort of a change or make the world better or even, dare I say, get something for ourselves. None of that has happened. None of that is in the cards. And we just keep hearing conflicting reports, conflicting versions of why this happened in the first place. You know, you just have to watch the same person. You don't even have to get countering views. Just watch Trump. He says different things from one day to the next. Iran was about to develop a nuclear weapon. Iran was about to attack us. Iran was basically insulting us, and we had to do something. It was a crisis. We decimated their nuclear capability, but now they have nuclear capability. It's nuts, all the different versions. And are we winning? Are we not winning? It was over in the first hour. Now we might be there for a long time. No boots on the ground. Well, maybe boots on the ground. From one moment to the next, it keeps shifting. And the thing that drives me crazy, the thing that keeps me up at night, is the fact that this country, right here, the one I'm sitting in, has no protection against a madman in power. You know, because the people who are allegedly on his side or in the same political party are too afraid to do anything to stop him and will just simply parrot everything he says. It's disgusting watching the press conferences, regardless of which lackey he's dragging along with him this day. They all just basically repeat whatever he says, even if it makes absolutely no sense. They react with hostility and threats to anybody who questions them. That's not what this country is about. It's never been what this country is supposed to be about. And sure, we've lived through a lot of really, really unpleasant and bad policies and ways people have been treated. But at least on paper, we would say that we hold ourselves to a higher standard. That doesn't seem to matter anymore. Nobody seems to care. You know, nobody in that administration seems to care at all. And every day you just watch a bunch of lies being peddled to the American public. And there's nobody standing up who has any chance of doing something about it and saying, this will not stand. Nobody's doing that.
And the hardest part is, if we get past this, we return to a state where that those are the ideals we put forth, there will always be this era and these incidents as the asterisk or the exception to what had been a spotty at times, but otherwise consistent record in a consensus on what and how we go about existing as a nation and what our expectations are in on the world stage of others and what people can expect from us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I absolutely. You know, the rest of the world not doing much better than this country as far as standing up to Trump, but at least they are standing up to him a little bit. I don't think any NATO country agreed to help out with this war. I don't think anyone in the EU, maybe Hungary, I don't know, has said they're going to do anything to back Trump up in this ridiculous escapade.
He's barking out, like, edicts to different countries, too. Like, oh, yeah, they should do this, and they should do that. Mm-hmm. And it's just basically, like, bossing people around, which I find hilarious. It's this strange sense that others have to take responsibility for a situation you created and have now made quite costly. Mm-hmm. Turned it into an incredible liability. I mean, it was already precarious, I think, to have so much of vital resources and so much of our energy dependent on this particular hotspot. But
right. Okay,
it was, and people did, it was functional at a time, but now for really the intentions of a very few, we're all paying the price.
And the latest from him is that we will remember who stood behind us and who did not. Well, let's make it easy. Nobody's standing behind us. You know, we're just following Israel and doing whatever they say. And nobody is really backing up what either country is doing right now, because what the United States and Israel are doing right now is insane. Well, and just horrible.
And there was no like warning. The public information, the education to the populace about the hardship they will likely incur. In other eras and with other sorts of leadership, you would get warning. here, it's like pure reaction and defensive.
You mean warning here in this country?
Yeah,
when
you would
you're
prepare
about to go to war?
The public.
Yeah.
You would let people know that there will be rationing.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
George W. Bush. Wait, are we talking about the United States or a different country? Is there rationing here? You mean gas rationing?
Well, I think in like World War II, I'm thinking of, uh-huh. but I don't know. I'm just saying, for example, hypothetically.
Well, when you know the Iraq invasion happened, you know, George W. Bush was there peddling lies, yes, but he did come to the people and explain what he intended to do. It made no sense. It was ridiculous. It was a you know horrible thing. In this case, we don't even get that. He just goes in. Doesn't even has he even had an address to the country? I don't think he's even done that. Just press conferences where he spouts forth all kinds of nonsense.
They're really not befitting of the moment. And in any event, the consequences and the sorts of things that have occurred, the disaster, I think, the disastrous nature of it mm-hmm. is itself worthy of much more in the way of prefacing it and letting the populace know that we're beginning something that will be difficult instead of all this like lying about how well it's going to go and how strong and submissive and dominant and just all this power like wielding that is made up.
How well it's gone already. It's been a cakewalk. It's been amazing.
Would you really be bossing other nations around if you had control of the situation? No.
This can get so much worse. And the fact that the EU and NATO are not getting involved is a sign of hope. Because if they did get involved, then it's like we've completely lost control. More and more nations get involved, and it's World War III for what? For what? It's not like Iran is getting a new democratic government. No. And by the way, the United States played quite a role in preventing that from happening back in the 50s, but we don't have time to get into that. But the Shah of Iran, son of whatever he is the last person that should be thinking of running that country. I just can't believe we're even considering making the same mistake yet again and being a part of that.
No, we've entirely accelerated that process, to be honest. It's already occurred. That's in the past. This is what we're facing now.
Anyway, today Trump said that he's been informed by most of the NATO allies. They do not want to get involved with this military escapade. Move he described as a very foolish mistake. No, Don, the foolish mistake was what you've done, and the foolish mistake of the American people by giving you the opportunity to do that. The question now is, how do we stop you? Trump said NATO countries were supportive of the joint U.S.-Israeli war. I must have missed that, which has now entered its third week. I think NATO is making a very foolish mistake, he said. Everyone agrees with us. No, they don't. I mean, just the lies that get peddled on a regular basis. Everyone agrees with us, but they don't want to help. And we as the United States have to remember that because we think it's pretty shocking. No, thank you, Europe, is what I say. And everybody else who is standing up to this nonsense. And, you gotta react against bullies. I've said this many times. This is one thing I learned as a child. You have to stand up to bullies. If you don't, they just keep doing what they do and getting worse and hurting more people. And I'm not sure exactly how to deal with this bully, but following what he says is definitely the way not to deal with him. Okay, so he says now, you know what? We don't need NATO. We don't need any countries. Okay, fine. Well, you're not going to get them, so everyone's happy, right? Yeah, great, fine, perfect, wonderful.
It's bluster, bluster, bluster.
Yeah, but there's nothing behind. Yeah, whatever. It's just ridiculous.
Just hot wind. Yeah, okay. Next story.
Well, what's going on? Okay, so the environmental issues alone are enough to really throw you into a rage. I mean, just everybody, Israel, United States, Iran, they're just bombing, either tankers or refineries, and the whole place is up in smoke. The pollution is off the scale. And I think it was today, Trump was attacking windmills? saying we have to prevent windmills from opening. That's the enemy. Clean energy is the enemy. And that, it is the enemy of him. Because imagine if we weren't so dependent on fossil fuels. We wouldn't care about the Strait of Hormuz. We wouldn't. It wouldn't be a big deal to us. And they wouldn't be so strategic in our eyes. You know, it might be a normal society. But instead, we're so enslaved to this that we're feeling the pinch at the gas pumps and airfares and everywhere you look, you know, heating oil, all that. If you have clean energy, you know, renewable energy, you don't have to worry about that. And, you know, there isn't a central point where it all can be knocked out, which is what we're seeing now. And it's likely to get a lot worse. I mean, they didn't think this through. They didn't think this through. Iran controls the Strait of Hormuz. Did you know that? Yeah, well, Trump didn't know that, apparently. So now it's easy for them to use low tech to attack these ships. They can be hidden. Drones are tiny. Drones are cheap. You know what's expensive? The things that shoot down drones. Those are very expensive. They're millions of dollars, many millions. And we're talking thousands for the drones, and they can cause all kinds of damage and death. No, didn't think that through, did you?
Well, they've come a long way, too. There are drones in the sea, even underwater, of course, like traditional types of projectiles and stuff. So there's a lot of innovation that's happened, and it's not as costly to disrupt something as fragile as that particular shipping lane. So it's really spun out of control quickly, and it could stay this way for a while. I think that's the thing that a lot of people are saying, and it's this sort of precariousness and precarity or like unpredictability. It just really makes any kind of forecasting impossible. The same thing happened with the sort of mayhem with tariffs and stuff, and I think people can't really count on anything.
You can count on this kind of craziness.
Yeah, that's about it.
Is there a way the stock market, I can invest in that? Because, boy, that's going
to
pay off.
The destructive nature of things. Well, I mean, that itself, gambling seems to be something that's thriving in a moment that is itself hell-bent on elevating human vice, I guess.
It's, you know, it's one of these rare times where the SNL sketch doesn't match reality. And reality is actually funnier than the parody. And I guess that's a tragedy for all of us because, wow, how messed up is the world where you can't even make fun of something because, no, it's not as bizarre and ridiculous. But every day, you know, just watching the press, and thank God there are press conferences. Imagine if all this was going on behind closed doors and you just didn't hear anything about it. At least we have some comedy, but in the end, it's a real tragedy.
Well, and it just looks like air quality. Like, I'm imagining just the toxic nature of everything. It's just, it really is fitting the moment in terms of discourse. And I think your underscoring of the whole, like, the just laying waste to the environment socially, politically, and literally, physically, we're just destroying our habitat. And
nobody cares. They don't care.
There seems to be a healthy dose of glee in the process. They want everything to be so costly and impossible that the majority of people just cannot survive. And Only the wealthy can afford oxygen or whatever.
And, you know, this isn't just Trump. There are so many evil people around him. That rat bastard Lee Zeldin from Long Island. Yeah, I called him that. He is responsible for so much additional pollution and poisoning. People are dying because of the things that he is doing as far as deregulation of all the industry that's causing all kinds of catastrophe in our environment to people in our country and the world, and taking pride in that, as if leading the Environmental Protection Agency is about making money, you know, instead of the environment. It's in the name, protection also in the name. He doesn't care about either of those things. Takes pride in allowing corporations to pollute a lot more and getting rid of all kinds of health protections. It's sick. It is completely sick. And I'm embarrassed. And I apologize to the world on behalf of Long Islanders for producing that maniac. But, you know, Trump gave him some power, and he's been unleashed and doing all kinds of horrible things. And his replacement, Nick LaLota, we'll get to him, you know, his congressional replacement. Boy, what a package that is. But, you know, okay, I was talking about how things are sometimes funnier than the sketches. I don't know, did you watch the press conference the other day that was about the Kennedy Center? Not the Trump Kennedy Center, because there's no such thing. He just stuck his name on there. But apparently now, what they're doing as a sign of progress and just, you know, learning from Orwellian scenarios, as part of the progress of the brand new Kennedy Center, they're going to close it for 2 years. Which, okay, fine. You know what? If you close it, you can't do any more harm to it. Well, actually, that's not entirely true, because they're going to be supposedly renovating it. But at least, you know, it won't be in the public eye where you're hosting shows. Not that anybody is performing. Everyone's canceling. Everyone's resigning. The whole thing has become a charade. But now, okay, this is the way you limp out with your tail between your legs. Say that, yeah, you know what, we're going to close anyway and do modifications. Yeah, can they just do whatever they want to that building? It seems he can tear down the White House if he wants to. When did the president get that kind of control? I never heard of that before. You know, Nixon could have demolished the White House. I think if he tried that back in the 70s, people might have said something. People might have tried to stop him. Anyway, so to get to that particular press conference a couple of days ago, of course, you know, most of it had nothing to do with the Kennedy Center and was all kinds of rambling. There was one point in particular, and this is when watching C-SPAN 3 pays off. He was, for some reason, talking about health of various representatives, namely Republican representatives, and how it affected the majority, the very slim majority that they have in the House of Representatives. And in this particular exchange, he's talking to Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House. He is basically talking about things he really shouldn't be talking about, and kind of forcing Mike Johnson to talk about it as well. You know, private issues. I just want you to hear how he talks about somebody who is facing a fatal disease, who's not there. You can't make this stuff up, but it happens every day. And I think Mike Johnson's reaction is kind of priceless as well. Let's have a listen.
And the Speaker of the House got the easiest job of anybody in government. He's got a majority of two. I don't like to say one because it varies, but between one, two, and three. And I think you're the only man that's ever lived that's able to be very happy about it. In fact, when we get up to three, you know, everyone said, oh, we get up to three. Actually, for a period of time, we had it up to four. And then we had a death. And death is very bad when you're the Speaker and you have a majority of two or three. But we had a death, and then we had another death, and we had some things. And it's, but we're looking very strong. We had one man who was very ill. It looked like he wasn't going to make it. I don't know. I won't mention his name. Should I? Do other people know his name? Huh? Do you want to mention it? He'll be proud. Go ahead. Tell him the story.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. President. Congressman Neil Dunn of Florida had some real health challenges, and it was very serious, and had a pretty grim diagnosis. And I mentioned it to the president, and I said, Congressman Dunn is a real champion and a patriot because he's still coming to work. And if others got this diagnosis, they would be apt to go home and retire.
What was the diagnosis?
It was, I think it was a terminal diagnosis.
He would be dead by June.
Okay, that wasn't public, but yeah, okay. It was grim. That's what I was going to say.
Wow. That's just violate the HIPAA Act left and right and just give out all this personal information. It didn't stop there. It's painful to watch, but it's also it's also a real lesson as to what unbridled power can yield. And it's ugly. It's really ugly. Yeah, beats any SNL skit. Really does. So, he said something else, which really kind of got to me. On Saturday, he said the United States may carry out more strikes on Iran's vital Karg Island oil export hub just for fun. Yeah. This is what we have been reduced to now. He's just amusing himself, saying, let's bomb this now and see what happens. It's not about justice. It's not about getting something better for the Iranian people. Look, I know plenty of people are happy that that the leaders are being targeted there. But you know what? Creating a power vacuum benefits the hardliners. You know, and these religious leaders are going to keep getting replaced. And you create a vacuum there, then the hardline military people will take over. Things are not going to get better. Not with this plan. Not with this plan. There is no unified uprising going on right now. People are terrified, rightfully so. Even Trump realized this after saying, okay, people of Iran, time to take your government, as if it's that easy, as if it's like a movie. It's not that easy. And he realized that about a week later when he said, boy, you know, they're just machine gunning people in the streets who want to demonstrate. There's really nothing he can do. And he points to Venezuela as some kind of success story when that hasn't changed at all. All he did was kidnap the leader of that country and replace them with the number two leader of that country. So it's basically, you know, the same policies, the same oppression. People there aren't benefiting. The only thing that changed is they're a little nicer to us. And I guess maybe that was the point. Just for fun, that's why we're bombing. And it's you and me, it's our tax money. Do you know, they spend, it's $1 billion a day on this Iranian forest. And we did some calculating, you know, using the old calculator here, and realized, this was last week, that they had spent enough to fully fund the new Hudson River Tunnel. You know, the one that Chris Christie vetoed a long time ago, the one that Trump is trying to stop because it's progress and he doesn't want progress for some reason. Yeah, but, you know, fortunately, Biden allocated the funds for this a few years ago. It's going to be finished fairly soon. Capacity on the Northeast Corridor is going to double. These are good things. But the full amount to fund that was wasted in just 2 weeks of this. And that is what we voted for. That is what's leading our country right now. If that doesn't enrage you, I don't know what possibly could. It's disgusting. It's embarrassing. I mean, you know, there will be history books 50 years from now, hell, 10 years from now, that are going to make us look so bad. So, you know, you better stand up and say something courageous now, because you're going to be judged as well with everybody else. Stand up, do something, be a Rosa Parks, whatever you have to do to make a statement, to stand up to the bullies, you know, to be an individual, to be a freedom lover, and just not embrace the lies. And, yeah, you can say, okay, well, I think my side is telling the truth, your side is telling a lie, and you can just go back and forth like that, you know, and say that whoever you don't agree with is lying. But lies are easy to prove, you know, when the facts don't back you up and you can point out the facts, you know, like, well, these numbers don't exist. This is what the jobs report said. It doesn't say what you want it to say. You know, this is where the economy is. This is what economists have said. This is, you know, what all kinds of facts and figures point out. You can't dispute that. And yet they try to. They try to say 2 plus 2 equals 5. We can still prove that it doesn't. But they want a world where 2 plus 2 equals 5 is just an alternative fact. We can't let them get there. We cannot let that happen. Today, this guy, Joe Kent, top U.S. counterterrorism official, resigned over the Iran war. He is the highest-ranking Trump administration official to quit in opposition to the conflict. He said pressure from Israel pushed the president into war against Iran. Now, I don't know anything about this guy. I don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy, but that's not nothing to quit over this.
And we are fully, like, at risk. I mean, that's an incredible change, particularly from that department, because you have to wonder, okay, so has that agency, that particular specific part of law enforcement or government, I mean, that agency is being undermined. So how, I guess, is their mission being put into peril? You got to wonder if they don't feel like they can work in a leadership role there. They're being undermined somehow. I mean, that just, and the action without all the sorts of precaution and thoughtfulness really has exponentially increased the risk that we get punched in the face again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so personally present to the fact that this is indeed my future being sold out from under me. Like, and it's happened for decades now, and I'm continuing to watch it occur while being told, you know, work hard and, you know, all this stuff.
You've been watching it for decades, but this is worse, right? This is...
Oh, profoundly. It's like
I just want to recognize
it's
that.
It's a crescendo. It's like, it's just more of the same. And honestly, it shouldn't be our comfort zone. Somehow, this is, you know, just another moment where people have to stick up for themselves and fight back and recognize that sometimes true evil can disguise itself.
And sometimes it's just right out there, so obvious, so overt, you know. And you wonder, why are people not saying anything? Why aren't they screaming in outrage? It's easy to bring people to a boiling point over nonsense, you know, but when something is real like this, you kind of are cowed into submission.
I see a lot less rallying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a whole lot of pride for this. I mean, maybe fits and spurts. But the response, the antagonism towards it has to reach a certain threshold. I think people are looking for moments of that to get the idea and feel permission to stand in strident opposition to this. I think it's there. It's just not, it's not found a sort of safety in numbers.
Well, the thing that brings it over the top, it's the economy. You know, if you wind up paying $7 a gallon for fuel, that's going to bring people over the top. If your grocery bill is insane and you can't sustain it, that's going to bring you over the top. There are deeper issues, of course, you know, with justice and treating people as human beings and all that. But in the end, it's always the bottom line. Are you feeling like you're falling behind? And if so, and you can point to a reason, that's what you're going to react against.
Yeah, it's so true. It's pocketbook stuff. I mean, that's like classic grassroots, you know, street level politics. It's what people really vote. You know, what their gut goes to is, am I better off than I was last year? You know, with the last guy or the last politician that came by and wanted a consideration.
By the way, that question, you can always get a no to that question because everybody asks that during campaigns. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? You can think of a reason why you're not better off.
Yeah.
You know, my wife left me or my car broke down or, you know, I can't keep up with my mortgage payments or whatever. you know, and it might have nothing to do with the person you're talking about, but there's always a reason. People very rarely say, yeah, you know what, I'm doing better than I was 4 years ago. It's hard to get people to be positive, but it's easy to get them to be negative.
When they are, I think it's a little bit suspect, and oftentimes you can see a bias in how hard they try to downplay their talking points and try to speak from some sort of feigned successes they're having when perhaps it's not the reality in the numbers. But my point was that I was having a conversation, and I think a lot of people are hearing this a lot, is people, someone I was talking to was talking about how hard it's getting, and I realized, you know, that's something that everyone is arriving at, but for different reasons, right? In some cases. They're aligned, but they might attribute it to different things. You know, same opinion about something, but they get to it from a different angle. And I feel like a lot of what I've heard is that, you know, people don't feel like things are okay, and in fact feel like they're getting worse for them, and they might attribute it, or they're reaching the same conclusion, but they have the different sorts of logic that they're thinking about when they try to attribute it to something. And I think that's interesting that collectively we're not happy, we're not pleased, and we have a lot of different opinions about why, but it's all something that we'd like to see be a lot better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something where, if, like you said, you strip out a lot of the downstream parts of the issue,
right,
and just look at the bottom line in your conversations, you'll hear a lot of the same feelings. People may have totally different, come from different political perspectives and persuasions, but they actually are talking about the same things that are affecting their lives.
You know, there is something, though, that I think really helps. I know it's helped us, and that's hearing people offer their opinions and criticize and not be afraid and also be funny at the same time. And we had a little escapade as far as I'm using that word a lot, aren't I? We took a trip into the city and we saw another TV show. We've been to Colbert a number of times. But this is a show you might not be watching, and you really should, I think. It's on CNN. It's also on HBO Max streaming. It's called Have I Got News for You? It's hosted by Roy Wood Jr. It's got a bunch of people basically talking about the news and just having all kinds of funny interactions. It's based on a British show with the same title. I didn't know there was a British show, and you can find it on YouTube. I don't know, just going in there to CBS, and it's quite easy to get tickets to as well, by the way, and they're free. It was really something that was kind of uplifting for me, because you hear intelligent people making fun of the chaos of the world and also being super educated on history and what's going on right now and politics. We need that. We need to hear people say critical things and not be defeatist. And, you know, I walked out of there feeling much better. And I also realized how hard these people work, because the show is an hour with commercials on CNN. It's on Saturday nights, but they keep preempting it because the news keeps getting in the way, which is really ironic because the show is about the news. But like I said, it pops up on the streaming service. But basically what they do is they spend over 2 hours putting the show together. It's much, much longer when you're watching it being taped. For instance, at the beginning, they show three funny slides related to current news going on. When you're in the audience, they show 12. So they basically pick whichever one works best. They have a conversation without a break that on TV lasts about 15 minutes. In person, it lasts an hour, nonstop. It's amazing that people are that engaged, that they can go back and forth and be funny as hell, you know? I don't know, Kyle, what do you think of that? Well, it was a unique experience, I think.
yeah, at the same time, the conversations were, like, really in-depth and about stuff that's kind of really just intense. Like, at this moment, pretty violent, pretty awful. We're talking about the attack on the school. I think that came up in conversations. Just really kind of gut-wrenching
but
stuff.
But which attack? Which school? There's so many.
The Iranian...
Oh, the Iranian girls' school that we bombed. Okay.
I think that whole discussion went back and forth, talking about the denials and what the Secretary of Defense was saying about it, and on. But it just really was impassioned, but funny at the same time. And it didn't feel like there were cheap shots about it.
No.
Like talking about an intelligent thing, talking about something that we're kind of the bad guys in so few words. So, just to have a little bit of humor and also reflection. You know, we're not taking ourselves too seriously.
Definitely not.
Especially being that we're being led astray and as a nation acting in what is essentially the wrong. And there's not much any of us can do about it.
Yeah, but it doesn't end with defeatism. Like, I felt like I could do something about it just by talking to other people and not losing hope.
Right.
You know, we all have our way of enraging people who are closed-minded, you know?
Well, absolutely. Getting the discussion, being there, listening, and, of course, just the discourse is the antidote, right? Because more and more people are informed about the way things, the way... the truth is being kind of manipulated and the way that we're being kind of conditioned to accept certain narratives and told that, in fact, any other way of looking at things is wrong. And even if you're a media practitioner, some sort of malpractice, which is just the height of insanity. And as you said, Orwellian, in fact, beyond that, I think, at this point.
Yeah, and, you know, in another era, we would be cowed into submission, and we would not be questioning. McCarthy would get to us, or, you know, the evils of the 1940s would get to us. In this particular case, we are fighting back, and we might not be fighting back with, you know, bricks and firebombs and things like that. We're fighting back with words, with wit, with challenging their interpretation of facts, with making them look ridiculous, which they don't really need much help from us to do. But it's just great to know there's lots and lots and lots of people who share that view. And, you know, they might be, you know, in some small town in Kansas, but they're still turning on the TV or the computer and seeing that program and getting a little bit of hope out of it. And it's just that realization that you're not alone, that so often is comforting to people who are fighting something, you know, whether on an individual scale or collectively through the entire country or world. We need that. And that's why they're trying to shut it down. This guy, you know, Brendan Carr, who we've talked about many times on this show, even before he had power, we called him an idiot. We called him an idiot before everybody was calling him an idiot. We were the first, I think. He is the FCC commission chair, Brendan Carr. He, again, has threatened to revoke broadcast licenses. He is echoing criticism from Trump over the media coverage of the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran. When you say it like that, it sounds like we're at war with Israel, the U.S.-Israeli war, and it's being held in Iran, a neutral place. No, it's not like the Champions League. Broadcasters that are running hoaxes and news distortions, I guess that's how they label different opinions. You know, he started it with fake news. He even admits, I made that term up. Yeah, you sure did. So if you disagree, you know, I guess they consider this show, they consider Have I Got News for You, they consider all kinds of things as news distortions and hoaxes. Okay, so broadcasters that are running hoaxes and news distortions, also known as the fake news, have a chance now to correct course before their license renewals come up. Isn't that nice? He's giving us a chance. He's giving us a chance to mend our ways and say the right things. And our licenses won't be in jeopardy. Oh, Brendan, thank you for the opportunity to realize how wrong we were to say that 2 plus 2 can equal 5. He continues, the law is clear. Broadcasters must operate in the public interest, and they will lose their licenses if they do not. Okay, Brendan. The law is clear. Broadcasters must operate in the public interest. What you fail to understand is that discourse, engagement, discussion is in the public interest. And those things oftentimes carry the risk of disagreement. And disagreement is good. Disagreement is how we move forward. It's how we learn. It's how we back up what we believe in. Or, dare I say it, change our minds. But I realize that's a threat to you and your kind, that you don't want people to think and to change their minds and reconsider where they stand. No, that's the worst thing for people that want to hold on to power. But that is what our country is founded on. That is our backbone. It's called democracy. Look it up. It's a good thing. And these broadcast entities are doing a good thing by challenging you, by challenging Trump, by double-checking, by finding facts, by reporting news. That's what it's all about. And if that threatens you, they must be doing something right. They must be finding something that you don't want them to find. And all you're doing with these threats is inspiring them so much you have no idea. Now, he did not name specific networks or cite any stories he believed or reported incorrectly. But basically, Brendan Carr's post, or I guess it's posted somewhere, referenced a Saturday morning Truth Social post from the president about 5 U.S. tanker aircraft in Saudi Arabia. He said 4 of the 5 had virtually no damage and are already back in service. None were destroyed or close to that, as the fake news said in headlines. Trump has repeatedly accused the media of falsely reporting on the war in Iran. In September 2025, well before it began, the president said that networks covering him negatively should maybe have their licenses revoked. He said such a decision would be up to Carr, whom he appointed earlier that year. It's so disgusting to see these kinds of threats being thrown out like this, saying that we need to be more patriotic. It's the country's 250th anniversary. This coming from the FCC, we need to be more patriotic. We need to stop criticizing. We need to report the war differently and make it more positive for the United States. Not say things like the war is widening, or even that people were killed. Why do you have to focus on the negative? How about all the people that weren't killed? How about focusing on, you know, the achievements that have been met? Yeah, it's sad when people die, but do we have to talk about it? You know, that's negative. That's bad. You're bad. Yeah, that's the thought process. You know, what worries me, and nobody's talking about this, okay, so you might know that CBS doesn't have a broadcast license. They're a network. TV stations have broadcast licenses. Radio stations have broadcast licenses. Networks are basically agreements. Go ahead.
Would you say it is a network of licensees?
Well, that is one way of looking at it, yes, because networks oftentimes own broadcast outlets. And that is where they're trying to hit them. So if Colbert says something that Brendan Carr doesn't like, well, he can't take away CBS's license because CBS doesn't have a license per se. But they do own TV stations that have licenses. They own WCBS, they own KCBS, they own a bunch. It used to be limited to 5, now it's no longer limited. And they can take away those licenses because those stations broadcast Steve Colbert. So, yeah, you can attack them.
Well, he doesn't have to because not only is the government disintegrating media, it's corporate ownership and consolidation.
Let's not get into that because, well, actually, that is kind of the
it's another
that's
aspect.
That's what I'm getting into. The corporate ownership of everything. Okay, let's look at Paramount Plus. They want to buy Warner Brothers, which owns CBS. No, I'm sorry, which owns CNN. You know what? I can't keep track of who owns what.
Yeah, the M&A environment makes all this sort of constantly in flux.
But HBO, you know, things like that. So now, and this is the part that I don't think we've processed. If that merger goes through and Paramount Plus owns CNN, well, couldn't they say, Paramount Plus, since you also own CBS and you own broadcast licenses through CBS, that if we don't like what you're saying on CNN or what CNN is saying or a program on HBO or whatever, we're going to take away your CBS licenses. I mean, yeah, the program wasn't broadcast on those CBS broadcast stations, but that doesn't matter. We're going to do it anyway. That's how they work. So I don't know. I think these mergers are dangerous for yet another reason. And I really, really wish there was a way of stopping that, where you can't own that much. There has to be some variety, some competition. That used to be a good thing. When did that stop?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of things stopped.
Yeah, I know. Common sense stopped. Anyway, getting back to Joe Kent, remember him? He's the guy who resigned over the Iran war. I basically said, I cannot in good conscience support the ongoing war in Iran. Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation, and it is clear that we started this war due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby. Yeah, who's this guy? Well, he is the top U.S. counterterrorism official who resigned today. Yeah, and it came as a surprise. The top ranks of Trump's administration have been fairly stable. No senior leader has quit while laying out a sharp policy difference with the president. And unsurprisingly, his stance earned a sharp rebuke from Mr. Trump. I'm reading from the New York Times. They call him Mr. Trump. I always thought he was a nice guy, but I always thought he was weak on security. I don't think you thought that. He wouldn't have put him in the position he was in. And then
made his job 1,000 times harder.
It's a good thing that he's out because he said Iran was not a threat. You know, he's not the only one that said Iran was not a threat. In fact, you said Iran was not a threat. A lot of people said Iran was not a threat. Did you not decimate their nuclear capability last year? I mean, you can only spring back so fast. There are other senior administration officials who, like Kent, are skeptical of long overseas military engagements and often argue for a more restrained foreign policy. In fact, this is tearing apart the right. It is tearing apart the right. I mean, there's this whole anti-interventionist wing of the Republican Party. They're the ones that supported Trump because, remember, he criticized those long overseas conflicts. Well, this is 18 days, but there's no sign of it ending in the near future.
Yeah, they're sending more assets and trying to rally and build a coalition after the fact. And, of course, those anti-interventionist groups within their party were, if you think about it, fundamentally created by their own interventions that went wrong and created those groups within their party. They're born out of aggravation for their own policy from their own people. To say nothing of the opposition that has great points as to why we shouldn't be spending blood and treasure the way we have been.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares really that that's the stance of Democrats, but in their own party they can listen to their own people and be at odds with them over groups really created by their own failures. It's marvelous to watch.
Well, what's interesting are the allies that are being formed. Because these people that you know, we're spouting America first, and we don't want to get involved in any more overseas adventurism.
It's like patriot.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're on the same side now as liberals who also don't want this for different reasons.
That's how the Tea Party was back in, you know.
They didn't ally themselves with liberals at any
earlier
point.
On. Not.
I don't remember that.
Well, maybe libertarian, but.
You know, don't get me started on libertarians, because everyone always says, oh, you know what, you're a libertarian. And no, I'm not. Stop telling me I'm a libertarian. I'm not. I'm not interested in that.
It was a take on an aggravation the left was already feeling at the time, but it was definitely pseudo-liberal. It was not liberal in any sense.
Well, in the end, it weakens Trump's position. But the thing is, he doesn't care because he's done. Either he's out, you know, at the next election, or there's not going to be a next election. Either way, he's not campaigning for himself. You know, he's having fun. He's doing whatever he wants to do. He has said that Cuba is next. He thinks he can just, you know, basically hop all over the world and pick a country and topple it. You know, Cuba just is recovering from a nationwide blackout caused by us. I don't understand how we get away with that. But basically, we're blockading, oil from reaching them. I'm not sure exactly why, because it's the same Cuba that's been there since the 1960s. Did they say something about Trump that he didn't like? Or what changed to make us really want to strangle them?
Marco Rubio.
What about Marco Rubio?
He doesn't like Cuba.
Who cares what Marco Rubio thinks?
He's the Secretary
Even Trump
of State.
Doesn't care what Marco Rubio thinks.
I know, but it's like his like pet project.
Okay, fine, whatever. but Trump believes that he can topple that regime, that too. You know, he's always been delusional, but it's really getting dangerous now. And I think the world is watching. Hey, if you're watching the clock, you might realize that we're continuing to talk when we should have shut up by now. But the thing is, we're doing an extra hour. So, you're going to hear us for another hour unless you can figure out where the tuner is on your radio. This is WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and the good old internet, WUSB.FM. Did we say we might take phone calls? Did we say that?
Excuse me. Yeah, I was ready to go if you want to try that.
The phone's not on yet.
We're coming to you from the lovely Stony Brook campus and greater Suffolk Brookhaven town area.
Mm-hmm.
And broadcasting worldwide at WUSB.FM. This is WUSB Stony Brook.
I just said all that.
And
no one listens to me. And we're going to find out now when no one calls that no one listens to me.
And you're listening to Off the Wall.
Wow.
Did you say that too?
I didn't say anything.
But I didn't get to say it.
All right, fine. You say it in the other channel.
And you can send us a lovely missive at OTW at 2600.
Yeah, you see, I can do that. I can move you from left
Why
to right.
Why are you doing that? Stop panning me. I'm ready with the phone.
Well, I'm not ready if that's not clear.
That's why I said what I said.
I have to figure out how to do this yet
this
again.
This is a very serious radio program.
No, it's really not.
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone, stand by, and we will take your calls live on the air, and you can share your thoughts on the state of the world, the state of...
Oh, that's not right.
Your household... the state of mind you're in.
Oh, I know where it is.
Maybe you just want to talk about St. Patrick's Day.
It's St. Patrick's Day. I almost forgot.
In that case, maybe don't call unless you haven't started celebrating.
Yeah, don't
yet.
Call if you're drunk. We don't need that.
We don't really have, I don't know. That could get messy, on the air.
Yeah, we have delay. We do have delay, so
yes.
we're ready for you.
No, I'm ready.
Yeah, but we're not ready yet because we haven't turned the phone on, although we're about to turn the phone on. The phone number is not the number that you might usually call WUSB. So, again, don't call that number. You're just really going to confuse and annoy people over there. Call this number, a different area code. So if you're still paying with message units or whatever, and don't have a long-distance plan, if that even still exists. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at you if it does still exist, but...
borrow someone else's phone.
Yeah, do that. This number will work. It's going to be turned on after I say the last digit. And we won't be disappointed if the phone doesn't ring. We won't, because we're used to it. Important thing is to say what you have to say.
A lot of people are uncomfortable talking on the phone, and I just want to say we hear you, or actually we don't hear you enough.
If they don't talk on the phone, how can we hear them?
Yeah, you should try, and this might be your opportunity. A little public speaking exercise, a little conversation, a little intellectual, like kind of meeting of the minds. That's here for you.
When I first started at WUSB, and the proof is on our website, too. Go to 2600.com and look at the radio section. You'll hear me back in the 1970s when I could barely string a sentence together. And you'll hear some amazing examples of that. But WUSB has helped me, you know, actually be able to express myself and learn things and talk to people and hear music and all the things that a non-commercial radio station should do, which is why you really should support WUSB. It's one of the few gems left out there. WUSB.fm is the website. There's all kinds of pledge information there. Keep us going because, boy, you know, we're going to be so essential in the times ahead. We already have been, but, you know, there's still over 1,040 days of this guy left. We have to get through them all.
And we do it together. And, of course, yeah, I concur. I've felt, since I've been on different radio, I studied and learned about it in school, and around 2010-ish, I guess I started being a guest, and it really is wonderful to keep talking. Don't just, you know, it's easier in your head, of course, but it helps to express yourself and share with people and see, you know, get comfortable, find your voice, as it were, whether you're writing or speaking. But this is a great way to practice, and, you know, it doesn't always come out, you know, perfectly, but you keep doing it, and I feel much more confident in a lot of conversations and even different forms of public speaking after having been on a show like this. And I haven't done like a music show. I'd love to do that sometime and program some tunes that I like. That could be a whole adventure. Or just talking myself, like just about things I'm thinking about. But you can do so many different things with the form. That's what I've learned, and it really is a great medium to just kind of just try things out and share your thoughts with the world.
One thing I've learned from talking on the radio is that in your head, you think of all the things you didn't say and wanted to say, but nobody listening knows anything about that. They hear what you said. It's kind of like the TV show we saw, because we saw it being put together. We saw it lasting 2 hours and 15 minutes. But what people see in the end is a one-hour show with commercials, which is more like 40 minutes, and it's very tight and put together. Now, we don't have the benefit of editing because we're live, but we do get to just say what is on our minds, and if we're able to put that together in a cogent way, that is what people hear. They don't hear your thought process. They're not aware of the things that you wanted to say and didn't say, or the stories you didn't get to. The thing is, does it work? And the same thing goes for music shows as well. I hear so many good shows on this radio station. What was it the other day we were listening to, I think it was on a Sunday night, they were playing songs about strawberries or fruit or something like that. It was the most entertaining thing. It's the kind of thing where you stay in your car and you don't want to get out because you want to keep listening. And by the time you find a radio in your house, it's hard. That will happen to you a lot if you listen to 90.1 or 107.3. And if you just listen on the radio, on the internet, WUSB.FM, then, you can hear us anywhere.
Yeah, I found that I was very much more critical of every second on the air when I was first starting out. And I think I'm much more forgiving now about, hey, you know, sometimes you can't articulate or you can't think of that last point you wanted to make, but you just try again. And after having the experience of it, I think I find I'm much more critical of people that are very bad speakers. But I'm also extending as much grace as anyone could to people trying it out and just doing their best to get their point across and be in it and innovate.
The important thing is that people have opportunities. And, you know, when I was at Stony Brook, I had the opportunity. This place was amazing. I was able to walk in the door be trained, learn things, practice. I want to make sure people have that opportunity, not only with Stony Brook, but all around. But, you know, since then, so many stations have gone off the air or been taken over, and a lot of times students don't get to mess around and do their own thing. So I'm glad that we're here. We're still able to do that. I hope we do it more and more, and people get inspired to come to Stony Brook and join the radio station and just, you know, be a part of things. It's really amazing. Okay, I'm sorry. We haven't given out the phone number yet. I realize that. It's area code 802, which, if you must know, is Vermont, but we're not in Vermont. 802-321-4225. That is our phone number. 802-321-4225. Wow, that was fast. Okay, so we do have listeners out there. That's good to know. Shall we pick up the phone and see who is out there? All right. And good evening. You are on Off the Wall.
Hi. I'm so glad you're doing another hour. And I wanted to tell you, I listen to your show every week. I really, really like your show. I can relate so much politically. You know, like a lot of us are going through hell, dealing with what's going on in our world. And you bring some sanity, I guess, just because I know I'm not alone. Let me just put it like that. But thank you. Thank you so much for your show. I've been listening for years. My name is Rose.
Rose. And Rose, where are you calling from?
I'm on Long Island. I'm in Ronkonkoma.
Okay.
You know where that is?
Oh, I sure do. I definitely do. Now, I guess you're listening you're listening on the radio then, right?
Yes, I like to listen on the radio. Yeah, I'm older.
No, radio is great.
So, yeah.
Listening on the radio is amazing because you don't get tracked. You know, it's anonymous. It's passive.
Right.
I love listening to the radio and discovering new things.
I send you an email every now and then just to share what I thought of the show or something. But I never know if you really get it.
We get all the emails. We don't read all of them, but. But thank you for sending us email. And by the way, that reminds me to give out the email address, which is otw@2600.com. That's otw@2600.com.
I just wanted to share the point that camaraderie is felt, and we get it in letters and interacting with listeners, but also in the types of events and
you're
other...
You're breaking up a bit.
Oh, well, you're on that microphone that does that. But go ahead, Kyle. Just speak louder and...
Sure. I just said being an audience member for other programs and other types of things is a great way, too, because you realize there's a lot of people that are having the same feelings about current issues and stuff. So we find that in other contexts is a good boost, and we're happy to be that for you.
I hope you're able to hear
Thank
that.
Thank you, and happy... Okay. Happy St. Patrick's Day to Bill McNulty, who I also listen to every week.
another USB legend. So thank you for being there for us. We appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thank you. Right. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
We listen to him, too.
Yeah, we do. 802-321-4225. It's good to hear from listeners. We don't do that enough. We certainly don't. But if you want to talk to us, critique or suggestions, experiences, stories...
No. You can write your critique, and then just everything else you can use the telephone for.
Okay. We have plenty more material though. We're going to just leave the phone line open if people want to call. We'll stop what we're doing and take the phone call. 802-321-4225. This is just tonight because we're on the extra hour, but we have plenty of other things to talk about as well. My God, just. We could go 6 hours with the material we have.
The material could go 6 hours. I don't know how we would be shaping up in the end.
We would be stumbling around. I want to stick with the war because, you know, it's a war and it's a big deal. We don't really know what war is in this country. You know, we say we're at war so many times, but, you know, Ukraine is at war. That is a war. You know, when you think something might land on your house and explode, and that's a realistic fear. You're in a war. We don't experience that in this country as a rule. We don't. You know, unless you live next to a crazy guy who has a lot of weapons and fires things in the sky, that's not something you have to worry about. But we do engage in war. We do send people off to fight in war. And most of the time, it's a really, really bad idea. Occasionally, it's necessary. But it hasn't been necessary in a very long time. So, I don't know what to call it, you know, because I don't want to minimize it either and trivialize what's going on, what we are doing. We are raining death and terror on innocent people. And Israel, my God, what they are doing is just, it's so horrible. They have no regard for human life whatsoever. Because you look at the civilians who are being killed in whatever country they're bombing today, and those numbers are always in the hundreds, if not in the thousands. Have we forgotten what's happened, you know, in Gaza? I fear we have. And the war crimes that are going on, they just keep happening. There's no accountability. Oh, sure, there's the United Nations. Sure, there's the World Court. But if the people who are committing the crimes don't recognize their jurisdiction and are able to not live under their jurisdiction, what power do they actually have? Last Thursday, Israel's military said it was dropping charges against five soldiers accused of beating and sexually abusing a Palestinian detainee in an alleged assault, partially caught on camera. Yeah, caught on camera. Not enough. The decision, which came as much of the country's attention was, they say focused, I'll say distracted, on the war with Iran, closed a flashpoint case that has bitterly divided Israel since the soldiers were arrested in 2024. At the notorious military prison that I cannot pronounce, prompting anger from members of the far-right government and hardline ultra-nationalists who violently overran the prison in protest. Well, that's a valid point. People are accused of beating and sexually abusing a prisoner. The natural retort is to violently overthrow the prison. Yeah, you have a point. Let's consider that. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu hailed the announcement, while human rights groups accused the military of ignoring one of the gravest instances of abuse in the country's network of wartime prisons. Israel's military advocate general just gave his soldiers license to rape, so long as the victim is Palestinian, said Sari Bashi, executive director of the Public Committee Against Torture in Israel, after the case was dismissed. She said the decision was the latest in a long line of actions that whitewash abuses against detainees whose frequency and severity have worsened since October 7, 2023. The now-dismissed indictment against the soldiers accused them of an assault that included dragging a Palestinian prisoner along the floor, stepping on him, tasering him, sexually assaulting him by stabbing him in the rectum. The Palestinian was taken to an Israeli hospital with fractured ribs and a perforated rectum that required surgery before he was returned to the prison. So I guess he didn't make up those injuries, did he? They really happened. The allegations of abuse gained steam when Israeli news broadcast a leaked video of the alleged assault. That is what media should do. The video showed a group of masked soldiers wrestling a detainee from the ground, where he and other Palestinians were lying face down and handcuffed in a fenced-in pen, and taking the detainee to an area of the pen they cordoned off using shields. In the decision dismissing the case, the military's top legal officer said the charges against the soldiers were being dropped because the video did not show abuse violent enough to merit a criminal conviction and had been improperly leaked to the media. Yeah, because it wasn't violent enough and because it was improperly, you didn't go through the right channels to leak it to the media. Therefore, the torture stands. The decision added that the Palestinian victim had since been released back to Gaza, creating an absence of certainty he would be able to testify in a trial, or he'd probably be killed first. No question about that. But because you release somebody, they can't get satisfaction in a courtroom? There are so many levels of wrong here. We don't have enough time to get into them all. In November of 2025, after much speculation about how the leaked video got out, which really is not the point, military advocate General Yifat Tamer Yerushalmi, who is the top legal officer in the official in the military, admitted that she had approved its release, saying she had wanted to show how serious the abuse was and convince people the military had a duty to investigate. And she became the focus of the wrath of Netanyahu and his government. She had to abruptly resign, and then she disappeared, only to be found phoneless on a Tel Aviv beach after a frantic search by authorities. The phone, believed to hold possible evidence against her, was later recovered in the sea. This just gets more and more bizarre and less about the torture. But the end story is that you can get away with it in Israel because Palestinians are less than human and the rules of law just don't apply anymore. It's a free-for-all. Do whatever you want. And now we're being dragged along with it. Recently, this top security official in Iran named Ali Larijani had a reputation for being able to bridge the country's hardline military elements and more moderate political factions, was killed by Israel. And now that way of bridging that gap is gone. And the news analysis in the Times basically said Israel's killing of Ali Larijani could allow military to tighten grip on Iran. They're not the brightest bulbs in the bunch, are they? It's just Israeli military here. Unless, you know, they just, you know, don't give a rat's ass about Iranian civilians and whoever is leading them. They just want to be able to pick who it is who does the torturing. There's this story that I know got a lot of attention in the media, and rightfully so. The guy who attacked a Michigan synagogue. You heard about this, right?
Yeah, I did.
He drove a pickup. This happened in near Detroit. He drove a pickup truck into a synagogue. And according to this story in Newsday, he was described, and we'll get to that call in a moment, he was described as suicidal in a 911 phone call to police by his former wife that very day. The call came around the same time last Thursday that Ayman Ghazali attacked Temple Israel and its early childhood learning center in West Bloomfield Township. The FBI said he exchanged gunfire with a guard and killed himself while inside the vehicle. And there's no question that's a horrible, horrible thing to do. But the way the story has changed over the past few days, you know, the facts remain the same. He waited in his vehicle outside the synagogue for 2 hours before ramming it into a building where dozens of children were inside, but no children were hurt. engaged in gunfire, killed himself. Israel's military has weighed in, saying on Sunday that the man's brother was killed in a recent airstrike and was a Hezbollah commander in Lebanon, which instantly changes the story into, well, okay, this guy was a terrorist. He was allied with Hezbollah. Makes sense. But that's not how the story was reported when this first happened. Hang on, I gotta find the right part here. In a bombing raid in Lebanon, members of his family were killed, including a niece and a nephew and a brother. So now, maybe they look more human, you know? It's not just a Hezbollah commander. It's a family. It's indisputably innocent people. Israel does not care. They bomb everybody. They kill everybody. And they blame their victims by saying, well, you shouldn't have been there. You shouldn't have been married to somebody in Hezbollah or the son of somebody in Hezbollah. Not realizing that Hezbollah is something that people join out of protection because they're being attacked all the time. Hezbollah is not anything to be proud of, but it's also something unavoidable for many, many people like Hamas. People have no choice many times. And this only makes it so much harder to escape, to do something different. But now by dehumanizing him, we never ask the question, how do previously good people wind up doing something so terrible? Well, your family gets killed in a bombing raid for no particular reason? That could explain it. Doesn't excuse it. But it could explain it. But when it's just Hezbollah, nothing else, well, they're just evil. You got to wipe them all out. And that's the Israeli way of thinking, at least now. You know, I have been a supporter of Israel for many years. I don't support this. Don't support this regime. I used to have faith in the Israeli people to do the right thing, to tear that government down, replace it with something more human, humane. Whatever word you want to use. And they fail to do that. We fail to do that here, absolutely. Our system has failed.
Yeah, I mean, we could put pressure and advocate, but we're unrecognizable in a lot of the way some of our policies around humanitarian and other kind of issues of rights in the world, like... It's tarnished by this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We are all complicit if we don't do something. If we don't fight back, if we don't push back, if we don't make whatever change we have the power to make. And don't tell me you don't have power to make change. We all do in our own way. I believe we have a phone call. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, good evening. You are on Off the Wall. Go ahead.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm not bad. How are you?
We're okay. We're getting through things.
Kyle's mic does cut out a bit.
Well, you know, that used to be my microphone, and Kyle very graciously swapped it out because they thought it was me that had a problem with my voice. But I think this proves that it's the microphone.
It might be a weird channel. It's an old mixer. Go ahead, though. I can hear you.
Oh, all right. No, I just wanted to say that I think it's really wonderful that no one came to Trump's pity party in the Strait of Hormuz. I'm so glad. That's the best possible thing that they all could have done. Just turn us down. Please turn us down. It's our show.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And it's good, you know, when you stand up to a bully, like I said earlier, you know, that's when things change. Nothing changes until you do that.
Yeah, I just hope none of them cave at some point because he's you know, not going to shut up about it.
Well, I think that's where we come in, where, you know, we're basically showing support for this, encouraging them to continue, and criticizing the hell out of them if they ever stop doing that. Anything else?
No. No, I think this is the biggest mess the country's been in my lifetime. So I,
yeah,
I don't really know. I don't have anything to kind of can't compare it to anything that's come before, really.
Well, just think of what's going to come afterwards. It could easily exceed that. But can I ask where you're calling from?
Pennsylvania.
Oh, great. Okay.
Are you doing anything to prepare yourself for that, or do you have any fun hobbies you do to try to take your mind off things?
I don't have any means to prepare for that, unfortunately. I might be slightly better positioned than the worst off, but I'm not far from that. So, no, I just hope, looking forward to getting out, doing some stuff outside, and go to the gym to distract myself. That's about it.
Now, by doing stuff outside, do you mean throwing firebombs or gardening? Or there's many different things.
Gardening.
Okay.
I could probably garden. I could probably throw firebombs in the garden. That would maybe get things done more quickly.
Well, not if it's your own garden.
Well, depending on the technique, maybe it could.
Uh-huh.
Try double digging with that.
Sometimes I feel like the yard has been firebombed.
Yeah.
But that's a great pastime, and I was out there digging around and starting to repair some fences. I think mending fences is something we should think about, metaphorically and literally. We're all doing a lot to maintain.
Yeah, well, the deer learn how to climb fences, apparently. all kinds of challenges we have.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, let's not forget it's St. Patrick's Day. Let's raise a glass or whatever we want to do. Celebrate a little bit.
I'm Irish, but I'm also kind of pagan, so I don't really know what to do with it as a holiday.
Well, do whatever you want. I mean, it's your holiday as much as anyone else's. Cool.
All right.
Well, thanks for calling, and keep listening.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, take care. 802-321-4225, 802-321-4225 is our phone number. And we are on for another 29 minutes here on WUSB. The show is Off the Wall. We're usually on from 6 to 7 on Tuesdays, but today we're on from 6 to 8. Nobody knows why, but we are.
Yes, and that is Emmanuel over there, and tonight I am Kale.
Oh, you're Kale. Is David Lynch naming you?
No, it's Irish. Yeah, I'm getting in the spirit. Okay. Anyway, phone line is ready, and I think of like joy a little bit. You know, I think St. Patrick's Day is festive in that way. A lot of joy, a lot of and also thinking about luck, and I think the sort of stories around Irish luck or whatnot, and that kind of stuff, and maybe have gratitude for good luck. We're going to need it.
If you had the luck of the Irish, you'd be sorry and wished you were dead. John Lennon said that.
Got it.
It's
okay,
a good song. Right. I suggest listening to it. In fact, we should have played that tonight. Wow.
Yes, what
no,
is
it's,
luck?
It's too dark. It's
we
too
get
dark.
Existential. What is luck even actually for real?
I don't know where to go with that, but
what other stories you got?
Well, okay, we're going to be hearing a lot about this in the days and probably weeks ahead, and that's the voting ID bill called the Save America Act that our local liar in residence Nick LaLotta has been pushing. That's our representative in Congress saying, "Well, what's wrong? Why don't people just want to show ID?" To vote, you have to show ID to get a library card, so why don't you want to show ID to vote? You know, it has to be secure from all the illegal aliens out there that are voting. Look, this is an example of a demonstrably provable fact that people like this just don't seem to want to recognize because it doesn't suit their political agenda. You know, It's super frustrating. There is no indication that there is voter fraud with people who are not citizens. None. You could count it on one hand, maybe. And yet they've turned it into a crisis where we have to do something about this. But there isn't a this to do something about. And the solution is so much worse than the perceived problem. All right, so the question is, what is this voter ID bill? Its stated aim is to crack down on voter fraud, which, again, is exceedingly rare. This coming from the New York Times. Fraudulent voting by non-citizens is already illegal and extremely rare, and there is no evidence to support Trump's charges. Mr. Trump, but I'm not going to say that every time, I'm sorry. His charges that Democrats have tried to mobilize undocumented immigrants to sway elections in their favor. Now, Democrats who oppose the legislation argue that it would suppress and discourage legal voting, particularly among groups that typically support Democrats, such as naturalized citizens, people of color, lower-income people. The measure, they say, places an undue burden on eligible voters who may lack the necessary documentation to comply with the new identification requirements. Now, I think their argument needs to be a bit stronger than that, because it just makes it sound like people who just don't have any ID whatsoever are going to be marginalized. And the thought process among people who oppose that is basically, well, they're not going to vote anyway because they have no ID. They don't have money for bus fare. They're indigent. You know, it's basically putting people in that mindset where you're ostracizing a particular group of people who don't have a lot of resources. And that's not the main argument. The main argument is that this will affect many millions of people, not just those in dire straits. Because what this bill will do, if passed, and thankfully it doesn't seem like it will make voter identification requirements much, much harder. Now, existing law bars non-citizens from voting in elections and requires those registering to vote to prove their eligibility by presenting a driver's license or the last four digits of their Social Security number, which can be looked up. Now, if registrants have neither, states are then authorized to verify their eligibility another way, such as by using a federal database that verifies their citizenship status. You see, it's all there. In fact, if you want to have fun with this, go talk to artificial intelligence and try to get it to admit that there's a hole. Now, I did this before. I said to Gemini, wouldn't a non-citizen be able to show alternative ID at the polls, like a student ID that doesn't indicate if they're a citizen? And Gemini said, in a split second, while a student ID can be used to verify identity at the polls, it does not serve as a substitute for the citizenship verification that happens during the registration process. In New York, the system is designed to catch ineligible applicants long before they reach the polling place. Here is how that distinction works. The two-key system. Think of voting like a high-security vault that requires two separate keys. One, eligibility, registration. This is where citizenship is verified. Identity, the polls, is the way you prove you are the person who registered. Showing an ID at the polls only turns the identity key. It doesn't bypass the fact that the person must have already passed the eligibility check weeks or longer earlier. When someone submits a registration form without a Social Security number or DMV number, the Board of Elections doesn't just take their word for it. They use a multi-step background check. The Board of Elections cross-references the name and address against various state and federal databases, like Department of Motor Vehicles, Social Security Administration, sometimes jury recusal lists, to flag anyone who was previously identified as a non-citizen. Like if you get a non-citizen driver license. Yeah, you can do that. Doesn't make you a citizen, obviously. The incomplete flag, if the Board of Elections cannot verify an applicant's citizenship or identity through these databases, the registration is marked as incomplete. And if a person's registration is incomplete or flagged, they usually cannot just scan a regular ballot. They must vote via an affidavit ballot. This ballot is not counted on election day. It is set aside for a manual review where officials verify the person's eligibility before it is ever opened.
So if they are not verified, that envelope is never even opened. And for a non-citizen, the reward of casting one vote is vastly outweighed by the legal risks involved in trying to slip through these checks. Every registration attempt creates a paper trail. And under federal law, a non-citizen who even registers to vote, let alone actually votes, faces permanent inadmissibility, meaning they can be deported and barred from ever becoming a citizen, regardless of how long they've lived here or if they have a family. So I asked this question. I challenged Gemma. I said, well, if a person has entered the country illegally and isn't able to be found in various state and federal databases, what happens if they try to register and obtain an incomplete registration status? Gemini said, in the scenario where an applicant is not found in any state or federal databases, often because they lack a Social Security number or a state-issued ID, the New York Board of Elections follows a specific set of protocols. The system is designed to allow eligible citizens who may be off the grid, like some elderly voters or those without traditional identification, to register while maintaining a wall that prevents ineligible individuals from successfully casting a ballot. When a paper application arrives without a Social Security number or DMV number, the Board of Elections does not automatically reject it. Instead, the applicant is assigned a unique voter registration number by the state system. The registration is flagged as unverified or incomplete in the poll books. The Board of Elections is legally required to attempt to verify the person's identity through other means. And if the databases return no match, they may send a request for information letter to the address provided. They may search other state agency records, like social services or tax records, to see if the person exists in the system under that name and address. And if the person's identity and citizenship remain unverified by election day, their name will appear in the poll book with a specific notation that triggers a mandatory ID check. The voter cannot simply sign the book and vote on a machine. They must present a valid photo ID or a government document that matches the name and address on their registration. But the dead end for illegal status, a person who has entered the country illegally, generally cannot produce a government-issued document like a utility bill or a bank statement that would both verify their identity and successfully match the address on the registration without alerting the system to their lack of legal status in other state databases. So, as mentioned, if they can't produce the required ID, they're given an affidavit ballot, and if they are not verified, their ballot is never even opened. There is a system in place. It works. And the amount of fraud is so minimal, there's many, many decimal points over before you even get to a number. What they are proposing is something that would make it difficult for people who live here legally. For instance, people who get married and change their names. You'd have to produce all kinds of documents to prove that you're the same person. Because the default is that we don't believe you. And a lot of people are going to be marginalized as a result of this. It's not a good idea. It is not what they say. When Nick LaLota says it's just like registering for a library card, okay, you know what, Nick? Let's find out what kind of ID they use for that. What's acceptable to a library? Let's do that. Let's use that ID. Show that. Yeah, you can vote. I guarantee you, you'll have a much bigger problem then. New York has a system. States have systems. But the thing that really is a threat here is a federalization of the voter rolls, because that's part of this. Yeah, it's run by states right now. Election boards are fairly local. They are not federal.
By design.
Yeah, that is part of the design, exactly. And if this were to get passed, all of that would be forwarded to the Department of Homeland Security, who would scrutinize the list and bounce people off it to their heart's content. And then you would have to fight them. All this for a problem that doesn't exist. Well, the problem exists for the Republicans because people aren't voting for them, and this is their way of fighting that, to keep people from voting in the first place. Don't fall for it. It's not as simple as what the Republicans are telling you.
Yeah, I think this whole thing, I mean, I heard the press secretary trying to talk about trying to reassure people that women who had changed their names through marriage, that this would all be taken care of. There would be no confusion around that. And I really just think that's a wholesale lie. But the entirety of this, the bill itself, I think it should just be called what it is, which is a massive disenfranchisement effort nationwide. Totally organized by the GOP and this administration under the guise of some sort of election security. And the more I think about it, the more absurd it sounds. Like, you really should not make voting more difficult. And honestly, in much the same way we want people to weigh in for the consensus, or the census is getting consensus from everyone existing within your borders, and just denying the opportunity and making it even for people who are allowed but maybe hard to find, making it harder for them to vote is un-American. I think trying to limit the amount of people that weigh in and form that consensus is really, it isn't representative, and we are supposed to be a representative democracy. And when I vote, I want to know it has the widest cross section of, people of voting age and people in and working and living in the places, that anyone is. And, you want to know that a place you're visiting has good representation so that everybody gets a say. And I think I'm imagining, like, okay, yes, we have legal requirements for citizenship to vote. So, but even that, like, is it really the worst thing ever? I mean, look at the penalties you listed off.
Right.
There's such a huge high deterrence to get one vote across. And I really wonder, like, getting, if non-citizens voted, is that really the worst thing ever? And I mean, we don't have an instances of it documented that are provable, really, that it's that widespread. I don't know. Maybe there's like a separate vote we should make for people who aren't citizens but want to, register at least.
Well, there's
where
this
they're
myth.
Thinking.
There's this myth that they're going to vote Democrat, which is not necessarily provable. But the fact is, let's not make it an issue because it's not an issue.
It isn't. I think this only the federalization only allows for deepening levels of formalized corruption, not like individual voters, but I think they're kind of pushing this bill. The passage of it would represent an ability to think about districting, already gerrymandered districts, then having their voter rolls purged from policies like this. And the other thing is the crazy ID things they've already been doing. This is going to require more people to have to go through costly and time-consuming ID changes, getting new IDs and trying to conform to things yet again. They keep changing it. And I don't think that's healthy, because you're not going to get a consistency from the people that are presenting that ID and voting. They need to be repeat customers. We want voters for life, not people that have to be kind of cajoled and convinced that it's important. It's a civic duty. It should be part of everybody's participation in our system.
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. This is just something that we're going to be hearing a lot about in the days ahead, and we need to be aware of it. We need to be ready to make those arguments, because they're going to lie. They are going to lie. They are going to make things up. Oh. remember this.
I know that sound.
This is our theme for films of the year that was. Do you know we went through every single year that the Academy Awards existed and then some? And we reviewed all the films, both international and domestic films, that won the Academy Award every single damn year. And the Academy Awards were held a couple of days ago on Sunday, and there was a winning film there, and we saw it last night. And that film was called what now?
One Battle After Another.
One Battle After Another. And I heard a lot about this film, but I didn't actually see it until last night. And well, what did you think, Kyle?
I think it is a little bit of a political fantasy.
Uh-huh.
Fantasy, sort of thriller. And it's partly, I feel like, it's like half true that there are people that really have passionate revolutionary feelings and have had them. There's generations of people
mm-hmm.
that believe that and form ways to represent and move society in the same ways political action committees
right.
do, or maybe, let's say, with different tactics, more urgent tactics. I think of like environmentalists and that kind of thing, and various actions that were really galvanizing and got a lot of awareness around certain issues. So, I felt like a lot of it was a yearning for an underground movement that doesn't really exist.
Well, yeah, there's a reason
because I think there's like there's a rallying subtext that we don't have this. There's no one really fighting. We are being abused.
Uh-huh. This was based on a Thomas Pynchon novel.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, to be honest. I haven't really been paying attention. But that's why it seemed to be a fantasy world, because it is a fantasy world. And what I loved about the film was, you know, it's basically to set the stage. It's about these, revolutionaries in the United States. I'm not really sure what the year was supposed to be.
But the name of it is French 75.
The French 75, that's the good.
Counterintuitive.
Right.
But it has a great way of bringing you right into like a storied lore of revolutionaries.
And they're fighting to get these detained immigrants out of a detention camp. It's so timely. But the story was written years, decades ago by Thomas Pynchon. Of course, it's adapted from the book. Everybody is exaggerated in one form or another. The revolutionaries are exaggerated, and the people holding the immigrants, the right wingers, they're exaggerated as well. And that's what makes the film work, is that it's all, you know, really crazy. And there's this amazing fight. There's all kinds of chases and, just insight. You know, it's just enough to be plausible, except that it's not. It's exaggerated beyond your wildest dreams.
Yeah, the use of different ways of communicating, I thought, was kind of almost a little parallel to some of the 90s, like, cyber-themed movies. Like, there's huge networks of people. Maybe there are, maybe there aren't. It seemed a parody of itself at times with that kind of, like, level and depth. It's like, oh wow, the nurse or this person is like in on it, and it's like, wow, that's so great, the strength of a movement. There are other parts of it though, you're like, how is this? No, wait, that could never happen. Why is this? And I had a lot of those kind of moments where I'm questioning it, but I didn't want to like be that analytical about it, because it was a lot of fun to watch. You're really cheering for things, cheering in different scenes, and some of the tension, the way they edited things, and like the car chase scenes really did have you on the edge of your seat, and the tone of it was great. The music, everything fit, and you're really taken for every twist and turn of it, without really being able to tell where it will end up.
By the way, before we started the show tonight, we had a conversation about this film and the fact that, you know, we did this for every year starting at the beginning of the 1900s, actually before that even, before the Academy Awards existed, but that we didn't do last year, and that we'd have to go backwards to do last year. And you made, yes, you made a challenge. You said, well, I should play the theme backwards.
I don't think you can do that on a it's not possible.
Well,
you have to always go forwards.
Uh-huh.
You played.
Go ahead.
You played the theme, and you were talking about how on reel to reels you'd have to flip it, or
uh-huh,
you have to switch the cassette over.
Right.
But
right.
I was thinking, I guess I was just thinking because we'd have to, like, start further back.
While you were talking before about this film, I loaded the theme into an editor and flipped it around and saved it, and here it is. Now, in the past, I thought it was cool because I'd go into the radio station, record something onto a reel-to-reel, flip the reel-to-reel around and play it backwards. And, you know, that was something unusual back then, and it took a bit of doing, but it's still cool. It's still something that is neat. It's just so much easier now. And, you know, I used to do it even before I joined the radio station with cassettes. You know, I would, you know, saw them open with a knife because sometimes they didn't have little screws that held it together, and flip the little reels inside around and play things backwards that way. Sometimes I did it by accident. Doing things backwards, yeah, the Beatles know this. It's a cool effect.
It's magic. I don't understand this.
So this is our official going back in time theme.
So we're back. And now what film?
I don't even know what the film that won last year is. And I don't know if we did the year before that. And we don't have to keep playing this because it's annoying. But One Battle After Another, I had so much fun watching that. I was not aware of time going by. It flew by. It really did. And speaking of time flying by, Kyle, we're in the last minute. So I don't know what you're typing on the other side of the room, but if you want to say goodbye to the folks, this might be the time to do it. We're going to say goodbye to this feature by turning off the projector. My, that got hot. Encouraging people to support WUSB by going to WUSB.fm, pledging whatever it is they can afford. I also want to say that in that film, One Battle After Another, the song that we all love here at WUSB, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised by Gil Scott-Heron, was featured prominently. In fact, the lines in the film were constantly referenced, and I just thought that was a really nice touch. That was something that really needed to be done, and I'm glad people did it. We're going to go out with that song, please write to us, otw@2600.com. That's our email address. Can't believe 2 hours flew by like that. Isn't that something?
Yeah. Well, keep talking, keep sharing. I'll figure out what Oscar winner we'll have to talk about, and we'll go back into the future. Well, anyway, see you in the future.
Good night.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and chip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised.
There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been serving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Churches will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.